What's up, Fool Podcast? What's up, Fool Podcast? What's up, Fool? We got Rodrigo Torres here.
Yeah, man.
Lisa Esparza, and
we got a call.
We got a call. What's up, Fool Pod Guide? What's up, Fool?
How's it going?
Who am I talking to? Let everybody know. We're going live. We're on live on YouTube on /
awesome
ATC.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. What's up, Felipe? What's up, Fool? This is Spencer Wiley with Pod Guide.
What's up, Spencer?
What's up, Spencer for hire?
How's it going?
Good, man. How many times you heard that? Only for the old
probably
guys.
Probably not a long time.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. We're happy to be on with you, man.
Hell yeah, man. I'm super, super excited, man, about the meet and greet coming up.
This Friday. Yeah.
Gio, sorry, man.
Yeah, no. It should be really awesome. It should be a good turnout. You know, you got to bring some stoners around you, and I'm sure they'll have a good time, man.
And this is Denver at Peak Dispensary this Friday, 4 to 6 p.m.
That's right.
Colorado.
And don't forget, if you mention Felipe, you get a half-gram joint for a penny.
Yeah. Damn, man. How many joints of that could you buy with a dollar, Rodrigo?
Be rolling with a couple penny rolls in there.
You can buy 10. buy 100 of them.
Yeah, 100. 100 of them.
You can start your own dispensary, huh?
So everybody, shout out to Denver, Colorado, or anybody in the area, Aurora. Mm-hmm. Or
that's where I grew up.
Colorado Springs, bro. They might show up, man. They always drive.
Yeah, people drive from Boulder and Colorado Springs.
Yeah, like when I was in Boulder, people drove from Denver over there. So you don't got to drive far if you live in Denver, man.
How about Aspen?
It's not. Yeah, come out. Anybody around the Denver area, yeah, come out on Friday 4 to 6 and come meet your boy.
And how long have you, how long has Pot Guide been around? When did you guys start?
So Pot Guide, started in 2013. We kind of started the site to fill a void. Our CEO kind of saw the need for, you know, those who were traveling to Denver to kind of find out what they were supposed to do. People were coming here and buying cannabis, and they really didn't know what to do after that. You can't smoke it on the street. There wasn't anywhere to take it. So he was at least, you know, letting people know the laws behind the cannabis laws in Colorado, to keep people on the right side of the law. And then at the same time, we added some lodging providers, so some areas and people who rented out, say, an Airbnb to cannabis users so that they, you know, would feel not only safe but would have a place to consume their cannabis. So
finally,
it's kind of how the site got started.
That's smart, because I think that's the problem in Vegas and all these places is there's nowhere to smoke it. There's not, you know, you don't have any guide to
still walking around like a criminal.
You got to be in that alley that smells like pee.
yeah. See, and it still happens, obviously. But I mean, even here in Colorado, it's still something that just recently with Initiative 300, it's, you know, social consumption lounges are on the horizon, and one of them is actually open, and one of our clients, and you can purchase cannabis and bring it there and consume. Still no combustion allowed, so you can't take in a lighter. You can't smoke joints, really, more so vaporizing and things of that nature. But we hope to see some changes, you know, in the future, because you're right, like Vegas, like that's a huge can of tourism spot just because it's huge on tourism. So, you know, you have people going there that are not only getting in trouble, but they just really have no idea what to do once they purchase cannabis. So we really hope that changes, because can of tourism just has so much, you know, potential and opportunity.
So right now there are Airbnbs where you can smoke pot and they allow it?
Correct. So we actually, on our site, so a little bit about, you know, how Pot Guide runs and what we, you know, do is where to buy, where to stay, and what to do. So our where to buy is our dispensary directory. So we direct people to those dispensaries nearest to them or in towns that they will be visiting or towns they live in. Where to stay is through our 420 friendly lodging options. And what to do is our 420 and cannabis friendly events and activities. So, on that where to stay option with the 420 friendly lodging, we actually have the most comprehensive lodging directory for cannabis lodging on, online. And there's, you know, in many different states that are on our site, say, you know, Colorado, California, Massachusetts, Oregon, you can go on and you can book rooms or, you know, a whole apartment that will allow for smoking, because the laws technically are if it's in your own home. So these, you know, people have allowed that to happen in their home. So, yeah, there's really some places that you can literally book online and just go blaze up.
Super cool.
That is badass.
We should own one of those. We should buy one.
I was just thinking right now, man. We should open up a motel 420 friendly with only one floor, no two floors, unless open up a hotel that only has balconies.
Dude, we're going to make our extra money on late checkouts.
Yeah.
Late checkouts, that's true.
The way you can make money on that, man, is sell the grilled cheese for $10.
Off hours?
You got a good idea there, man. You're going to have to call me when you get that going. I'll help you out.
All I need is a balcony, Doug.
And that's some of them as well. Some of them do only allow smoking on a balcony or, say, like, you know, on the property. Some of them aren't smoking inside the house. But smoking of some sort on the property is ones that we list just because, again, we're very, you know, education and legal focused with our site. So we don't ever want to be steering people in the wrong direction, having them get in trouble. So we want to be able to provide people with a all-inclusive cannabis experience so they can just really have the best time wherever they are.
For sure, man.
Because sometimes Rodrigo's rolling up some stinky in his room. Like stinky. Yeah. And he's not even he's not even smoking it. But the smell goes into the hallway and everywhere, and everybody that doesn't smoke who's against it is telling everybody.
What's going on here?
I think they're smoking over there.
Yeah, Orlando. They're smoking that happened,
Yeah, or Orlando or places like that. They can't really give you a ticket. Like, how about, is that against the law to roll it up?
In some states it is.
Yeah,
it's
a fact.
For it, like, to roll it up and, like, to just have it and roll it in general?
Yeah. Create an aroma.
So
in Seattle or Denver, LA?
Yeah, there's still, you know, obviously, like.
Cause my mom got mad.
I mean, sometimes, you know, that's when you know it's good. You don't even have to light it up. You just open the bag and the whole room reeks.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. Not everybody's weed, by the way.
not
everybody's
weed,
man.
Only the best.
Only the best, man. So you want to go to the best? I'll see you guys March 21st.
Oh, March 21st.
I'm sorry. I'm ahead of my time. That's how good it was, bro.
You'll see him this Friday, right?
This Friday, the 21st of December.
And then on New Year's Eve.
That's the meet and greet. And then New Year's Eve, he's coming back to perform.
The weed and greet.
And New Year's Eve, you're coming back to perform in Denver at Paramount Theater.
Let me tell you, bro. The first person that has sticky ass hands, I'm going to blaze out with him. And it better be candy.
The forever handshake.
Well, yeah, you know when you come, you know, we got you because we not only know where to get it, but yeah, we've got the places to consume. So you know, you're in good hands when you come here, man.
So what's going to happen is that people might give me a lot of stuff that day, and I'm not going to be able to fly with it back home. So you know, save it for me. That'll be the 31st.
Put it in a mason jar for you, dude. I want to see what all the secret stashes you're going to be able to puff on, dude, out there.
How about edibles, bro? What's the deal with edibles? I heard that the edibles are losing their grade. They're going down.
Where it's legal, right?
The concentration.
The concentration.
Mm-hmm. The potency?
So for edibles, a lot of them nowadays use distillate. So it's a very refined hash oil. It makes you don't really get that weedy taste or that like really like hangover feel from it usually. Distillate's a lot cleaner of a high. So a lot of like the gummies and the edibles out here, not only in Colorado, but in other states as well, started using that just to, again, get that clean high and to also, you know, not have that, that lingering flavor. So you really can, some of the gummies out here and we'll make sure to steer you in the right direction on that too. And Peak's got, you know, a great selection as well. So I'm sure you'll be able to shop while we're there. But, there's just so many options of awesome edibles out here, and I definitely gravitate towards the gummies and those, you know, that taste a lot like the candies that I love. So, they're potent though. You definitely have to be careful, and that's why they do have different regulations. So you can buy, you know, a higher milligram, a more potent item as a medical patient than you can as a rec patient. Just because they don't want people, you know, eating too much and, you know, falling asleep for 3 days, because that's really the only downside to eating too many edibles.
All right. What's up, boo? Thank you, Spencer Wiley, man, for calling in. And we'll see you guys, man, on the 21st from 4
yeah,
to
man,
6.
Yeah, man, can't wait. Again, we appreciate it. We look forward to it. Yeah, everybody come out and come say hey to Felipe.
And don't forget, man, half a penny.
A penny a for penny. Half a gram.
Okay.
Half a gram for a penny.
Hell yeah, man.
What a bargain.
We'll see all the regulars that show up early when it opens. What's up, fool? Thank you very much for calling in.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Thank you.
We'll see you soon.
Yeah.
Peace.
All right, bye. Happy holidays. Pot Guide is the leading online guide to finding dispensaries, 420-friendly lodging, cannabis events, dispensary deals, and more. They're bringing me out to Denver this Friday to the meet and greet and peak dispensary from 4 to 6 p.m. Stop by, take a photo, say Felipe, and you'll get a half joint for a penny. Half gram joint for a penny. On the phone is Spencer. All right. Oh, what's up? Upcoming shows. Denver, Colorado. New Year's Eve at the Paramount Theater, Bridgeport, Connecticut. January 3rd through the 5th at the Stress Factory, Turlock. January 26th at the Turlock Community Theater. Visalia, February 1st at the Fox Theater. Coachella, February 2nd at the Spotlight 29 Casino. Raleigh, North Carolina, February 22nd to the 24th at the Brand New Improv. Like it's like brand new. It's like they bought another club and they named it the Improv. What's up, fool? On sale now, Wichita, Kansas, March 16th at the Orpheum Theater. You better get those tickets, man, because I only go there once every 10 years. So, man, you better get them fast. All right. That's it. Yeah. Did it, fool.
That's all the business.
Well, jingle, jingle, ho, ho, ho. Got your sweatshirt.
You got your little Christmas spirit going on.
Bro, I got there at the hospital when Lisa was chilling. Well, you know me, man. Somebody in the hospital I love, I go shopping.
At first, I thought you had a bunch of headphones on there. It looks cool.
Yeah, man, you know, I'm trying. What's up, fool? I'm not worthy.
Yeah, same here.
We have right here Enrique Castillo, bro. Actor, Chicano, badass, bro.
Writer.
El mero,
bro. Oh, and by the way, I didn't know that you were part of, you wrote. The last brown hat?
I adopted it.
You adopted it from the...
The last angry hat.
To a play.
Close.
Yeah, because when I used to hang around with Willie Barcena, I don't know if you know a comedian named Willie Barcena.
Yes.
You drank with him. Anyways, he got you less espresso.
One more shot, bro.
Hey, bro, come on.
I don't know him well, but we have met.
He raved about the play when he went to go see it. Okay. He saw it like... I say he saw it like two times. He took a different. No. He saw it because in Emilio Rivera was part of it, right?
Not when I was involved. I don't know when Emilio.
I never saw it, but the way Willie Barcena talked about it, it's like I know about it, bro. Like, I know, like, not all of it, but half.
It was written by Alfredo Ramos.
Alfredo Ramos. I know that fool. he's they're millennials.
Uh-huh.
He's the Generation Xer.
Okay.
Well, that's us. That's our age,
basically. Yeah. He used to hang around with some fool. I don't know his name. But see, I don't know the main dudes of the movies who wrote it and all that. I know their sidekicks, bro. Like the guy that, you know, like that guy that hangs around with him because he's trying to help him out. You know, he was a shitty guy in the neighborhood. But he hangs around. Everybody has that guy, bro.
Go give me some coffee, Holmes.
That dude.
he wrote and directed a film called Road Dogs that he worked with Jacob Vargas.
And something about a red couch.
Yeah, something like that.
Your memory is like in chunks.
I don't know if it was Road Snippets. Dogs.
I have some pills to help your memory.
But there was like it was a movie I saw where Emilio Rivera and them, they were all hanging out. And there was a red couch in the neighborhood. They all sat down on it.
I think Danny de la Paz was in it too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Or was that Food Stamps? That was another one he wrote and directed.
Yeah, man. Alfredo Ramos, I met him at Willie Barcena's house. Willie Barcena, man, was like, yeah, bro, and talking. I thought Willie Barcena had a little pad, bro.
So that's before the house on up there?
Before the house.
The bachelor pad.
Before the big house he has now. He had a bachelor pad on top of the cool restaurant above 7-Eleven in Silver Lake.
All tucked in there?
All tucked in. They're nice little place.
Above 7-Eleven.
Across the street from 7-Eleven.
Where Nelly's is?
Nelly's. Remember Nelly's? Yeah. That was a good restaurant. Nelly's, fish.
Nelly.
It's not there no more, I think.
Yeah.
I like that place.
Well, that's the first time I ever had, I bought pasta to go, bro. Or I eat pasta without pizza. that's where I'm from, bro.
Oh, you can eat.
I put Willie Barcella bought me a pasta, and I was like, hey, they don't got pizza here, eh? I got slice.
I haven't seen Willie in a while. Is he still on the road?
Yeah, he's always still on working. The road, man. He was a title of most appearances of the Tonight Show.
Yeah, man.
12.
That's right. 12, bro. Choke you.
Who's did done a lot that, of shows bro? In development, too.
Yeah, a lot. I was there for like the last two, when he got the deal with Fox. That fool came out of the Fox office. I was chilling outside talking to this guy that fixes those little cars, the golf cars. So he was like a homie. He recognized me from watching comedy, so him and I were talking while he came out. And Willie Barcella came out doing roundhouses, bro, in the Karate Kid crane.
He killed the meeting or what?
No, yeah, he killed it. He got a development deal.
Hell yeah.
And then he canceled a Rudy Moreno at the Ice House, bro.
How's your deal going?
Your my deal. There was no deal.
We had two deals.
We had one deal last time with Peter Murrieta and Bobby Bowman.
Yeah. And that was a couple
Dustin
years ago.
Ibarra.
Yeah.
They wrote the pilot and they said, nah.
Is there a role for El Mero Mero there?
Bro, there was a role for El Mero Mero.
There were roles for lots of people, but they said no to it. But then we had another one.
There's another one.
Based on our lives. And then
our lives.
That we've been shopping around, and we're still shopping around. We're done with the networks because they all said no. One, and ABC wanted it, but it was too similar to what another thing they got.
But they got Danny Trejo's. They picked up Danny Trejo's show.
Yeah. It was too similar. Not just because you're Latinos, but but because a lot of the content was similar. So, yeah. So that's sad.
And I was too tall to be on the Mayans.
That's right.
Bunch of little dudes on that show, huh?
Hell yeah, bro. What, they're riding mini bikes?
And I'm hold too, me. And I'm too old. So.
They already got energies almost.
Yeah, Eddie and I have always tried to do something together that we could be Montana and Santana.
What's up with that?
No one named Montana and Santana. Ooh.
Dude, that'll be something like collide.
I'll be a badass play.
That's what I'm saying, dude.
Hell yeah, man. So where are you originally from? You got an accent. You're not from LA.
No, I'm not. I'm from Imperial Valley.
Orale.
Migrant Raleigh. Worker from Imperial Valley.
Raleigh, right?
No, Calexico. Right next door. Border. Right. I'm an American citizen past the wall by about 100 feet.
Wow, bro. I had a cousin passed away, Andres. He's from Calexico and Mexicali. He used to go back and forth.
Right there?
He was a real Miklo, bro. He was half. His daddy was white, I found out a year ago. And his mom was my dad's cousin, Latina, to the max.
Yeah, my grandson is a Chilewerito.
Yeah. I know, man. Rodrigo, what are you, bro? You're a pan dulce?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, I don't know where the original people came from, but you
know. We did our DNA test.
1% Jewish.
3% Irish. And we know why the three hairs coming in.
Little red ones?
I know. You do one of those things. Like, somebody in my family did it, and you're like, you're from all over
you're
the place.
Yeah, everything. It's not gonna like you're a purebred or something.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Puro mestizo.
Everybody, 39% Native American, 11% Greek Italian, and then
9% African.
9% African, and there's little ones, like
Slavic.
Slavic.
Finnish.
Islander or whatever.
Pacific Islander.
Pacific
you had
Islander,
like
and then Virgin, Ivory Coast. Come on, man. they can't solve Tupac's murder, but they can trace my blood all the way back. To like the slave area?
No, they say your DNA matches people in that region who are native to that region. How they do it.
Yeah, but you think it's kind of bullshit.
They'll track it one day like that, eh?
Yeah, because really? My daughter did it. I think my youngest daughter.
What'd she
I think
find
it
out?
Came out the same thing, like 39% Native American.
Yeah.
But what does that mean? You know?
Exactly.
But you had a lot less Native American, didn't you?
Yeah, it was like Iberian and stuff.
Yeah, mostly that.
Yeah.
I found out one of my kids actually not my kid.
you need to get some money back.
Somebody owes me child support, bro.
Get a rebate, dude.
Well, who's claimed them?
I know, right? Nobody.
You're going to do it that way.
During Christmas, you get him back. During Christmas, you get him back.
How'd you make it out to Los Angeles?
Roundabout way, I went to college at Berkeley in summer of 68.
68?
When all the barullo was going on.
Going down.
Met Luis Valdez there from El Teatro Campesino. Oh. Eventually became a member of his company. After I left the company, I did music in San Jose. Then I wanted to get back into performing arts, so I moved to L.A. June of 78, and in July, I started working in Zoot Suit with Luis at the Mark Taper Forum.
Wow.
That's cool. A roundabout way. From a migrant worker to Berkeley to Hollywood.
And how'd you make it out to Berkeley? Were you smart in school, or what was going on?
It was through the EOP program, Educational Opportunity Program for Underprivileged. I had a mentor in high school, a teacher that took special attention to particular students, and she gave a test one time on Shakespeare, which I did well on, and she said, okay, I'm going to put you in my prep class, college prep. I'm going to take you under my wing, and then I'm going to make sure that you fill out all the paperwork, everything, to go to Berkeley, and she did it, got me over there. And then I flunked out my first quarter, and I acted my way back in.
Really?
Well, when you're a farm worker kid with no experience whatsoever, you know, you spend your summers working in the fields. You don't know a lot about college courses and stuff.
So. You MacGyvered your way
back
in.
Hey, man, everything Enrique says, it sounds like if I'm a senior, I'm all into it. You're like,
well, but what you do learn in the fields is perseverance, mano. You don't give up, because once you bend down, better not get up.
It starts hurting now.
Heck yeah. You can't get back down. Yeah. It hurts too much.
You know, it feels like when you go to Las Vegas, bro, and you see all those gorditas, bro, holding their high heels, walking now.
Once you take them off, you can't put them back on.
Once you take off those shoes after walking a mile, bro, those high heels, those feet, bro, are like fucking buñuelos, bro. They're like virotes, bro.
No, my wife was always like that, right? The spike heels and then the long legs. And then after a while, it's like, ay, 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 you know, I got to take these off. So, you know, I always tell her, pero te ves chic.
So somebody said, this is the guy from McFarland.
McFarland. That's my story, actually.
Yeah.
That's the way I was. I was a track athlete in high school.
You were?
Yeah. I was his 3-state champion.
You still look you're in shape, not like Rodrigo, bro. Like he was picking up towels. Eh?
Well, got Aquaman over here.
Man.
When you're diabetic, you have to watch the weight, you have to watch the nutrition.
You diabetic early?
No, I onset type 2. But I'm insulin dependent because my pancreas doesn't make insulin. I'm waiting for the stem cell.
Man, Mexican get diabetes, huh? And black people get sickle cell.
I think a lot of people get
white people go bald and just depression.
Well, Penny Marshall, rest in peace. She died of complications of diabetes.
That was messed up. Yeah. Bro, I was one of those kids, bro, that would watch TV and try everything that happened on TV, bro. I even tried to swallow. I swallowed a little screw, bro, one time. I choked to death. And I threw up on my dad's car. You know, why'd you swallow that screw? I saw it on Alfalfa do it, eh? And then Penny Marshall with Laverne and Shirley, she would put Coca-Cola and milk. Pepsi and milk. And I didn't know how to do it, but my friend, I could never get milk and Pepsi together. Like in my house, we had milk, but we never had Pepsi. We never had an opportunity, man.
You know, because
that Pepsi would be gone in an hour, bro.
Yeah, you make your own soda, right? When you don't have any money, man. You know, you get a glass of water, right? And then you put some Alka-Seltzer in it and put sugar in it.
Damn, bro.
When you're desperate, man, for soda.
Yeah, that's like those.
Hell, I didn't have pizza until I went to college.
A little Sally Coke, huh?
You're talking about pizza. My first pizza was in college, man.
Wow. Yeah. Was it good at least?
Oh, I'm sure.
Hey, man, it's like, where you been all my life?
You know, you wonder, like, wait a minute, man. We had these ingredients growing up.
Because, dude, we go to Calexico now, and it seems a little, like, you know, rural, you know? It back still then, is. It was probably yeah. way more, right?
Way more. There was probably not even 10,000 people around that time.
Damn.
Most of the little towns, and Heber's right in between Calexico and El Centro.
That reminds me of that guy that my boss in New York, who is Dominican, and he grew up in a rural area, and a very poor area. And he said that they had no refrigeration, so to make the water cold, they would have like really strong mints or cough drops.
Yeah,
because they sucked down cough drops even when they didn't have a cold. I was like, why do you guys eat all these cough drops? And they would call it mint.
We had a swamp cooler. That's the only cooling thing you know we had in the house.
Damn.
But if you don't have that, then what you do is you go to where they have the ice boxes. You get a big piece of ice, right? A big block of ice, and you get a tina. You put water in it, then you put the ice in it. Put it on the windowsill, and then you put a fan in front of it from the outside.
Smart. God damn, they have radios back then.
Well, AC.
That's like damn.
He's like Matthew McConaughey in Interstellar. Dude, that's awesome, dude.
I can picture a Nicky bro walking with his little brother carrying ice, big old ice cube, bro. Like, you know, brother, we're out though.
Yeah, you drag it.
That's a mean Mexicanazo right there.
Yeah.
You drag it on a canvas.
But that's what it was back then, right? If you had a refrigerator, you just had the box and you got to pay for ice and put it inside, right?
Yeah, correct. And then you chip at it with the ice pick.
Because in the old school cars, too, they have that compartment where you hang on the window and you put ice in there and it makes your little airflow.
Well, you did whatever you could. I mean, air conditioning, yeah, you roll down the window. And you, because we were migrants, so we traveled through the valleys in the summer. There were like five of us kids, plus parents, plus all the luggage and everything, and no air conditioning. So you're talking like 100, over 100, traveling through the valleys. And then you get there, and you have that kind of like essence about you, that aroma, you know, very nostalgic. Reminds you of old homes.
So your family would follow the crop?
Yes.
Like I guess, Salinas, strawberries in the winter.
Seasons.
Particularly seasons. A little town potatoes. Called Mendota.
Mendota.
Yeah, which is in the San Joaquin Valley, and it's the cantaloupe kingdom of the world.
Wow, Mendota. I remember that.
Yeah, you got to go there, man. Good stuff there. So we spent summers working a lot there.
Picking cantaloupe?
In the sheds.
Sorting. You got to bend down and get them then.
No, well, we worked the fields. We did do that, but mostly we did the sheds. So my father had his own crew, and that's the other thing. He didn't have any women on his crews because he didn't want the women working along the guys because the guys would flirt with him, right, slow down the work and everything. And when you work in the conveyor belts in the packing shed, those cantaloupes weigh at least 5 pounds each, 6 pounds, 7 pounds. The big, you know, they come in different sizes. So when you're working at a fast rate, you got to pick up one cantaloupe with each hand. And he always felt that women were going to use two hands for one cantaloupe. So he never let women work in his crews.
Damn.
No slowing down of the production whatsoever.
Yeah.
So you're basically, besides the conveyor belt, your hands had to, like, dig on their own and be their its own conveyor belt.
Pretty much.
You get one like this without even thinking.
And you sort them by color,
And that's knowing your eyes, your mind knows that your hands programmed to do that already. So you're like your own machine.
Yeah. Well, in our case, my brother and my father trained us when we were very little. I mean, we were working in the fields with him from the time we could walk. You know, and we worked holidays, weekends, and summers. So. It wasn't like everybody else. You know, the holiday, you go hang out and have fun with friends. On the weekends, too, we were working with my father. We were responsible for his truck to clean it and put water and ice in the can and then drive with him at 3 o'clock in the morning to set it up for the guys to cross the border and get on the truck. And everybody knew, unless you were part of his crew, you didn't get on his truck. He was very strict about all that. So if we were working, my brother and I, we had to be better than even the grown-ups because he didn't want anybody to say, hey, you're treating your kids better than everybody else. So he would throw terrones at us if we were too slow.
Throw rocks.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty strict.
The book I'm reading, bro.
My dad, man.
the Have Not Told about the slaves who were picking cotton. Uh-huh. And when they would put the seed in, you know, they would put the CD in one hand and then pick out the bad stuff out of the pick up the thorns out of the cotton, you know, real fast, and then put the seed at the same time without crushing the flower,
right?
Because the flower has to be perfect, and then when you picked out the cotton, you had to pick the cotton out and leave the flower there, and without, you know, you go home with a bunch of pines on your fingers, but they're just like Enrique was talking about his hand with the cantaloupes, but and his father throwing rocks at him to speed up. These people were getting whipped, you know. Of course,
yeah.
The more you get whipped, the faster you will go. So you know, your hands become like a fucking machine, bro.
Yeah, like hard.
So you're fucking scared. So you're going faster, huh?
Like Charlie Chaplin in Modern Times, you become part of the machine.
And then the cotton gin did away with all that stuff.
But yeah, the cantaloupes too. They put
cotton gin really didn't get rid of it, bro. They were still picking cotton, bro. The cotton gin just
been
separated
for about almost 100 years before.
Yeah, it all breaks down, like, you know, which slave owner had the resources and all that stuff and could afford all that stuff.
Yeah, they were property.
Totally.
But you still needed a human being to pick the cotton off the fields. Yeah. That didn't come until 1953. Until actually, a machine came in and picked it up.
Yeah.
But it was off to from 18 to all the way to 1867, bro.
Eli Whitney's cotton gin.
Yeah. Interchangeable parts.
And then, of course, humans can't work at the rate that machines can. That's when drugs came in.
Yeah.
To keep the people going.
Of course.
Those drugs in the fields, too?
I don't know. I never had any. What is that?
Because coffee. Cafecito. So you were drinking like black coffee as a kid?
You know the boxer, Carlos Palomino?
Yeah.
Yeah, Carlos was telling me years
from
ago.
The Valley.
Yeah, yeah. He was telling me that when he was a kid, when he was a toddler, you know, they were drinking still from the bottle, that his mom used to put coffee in his baby bottle.
Yeah, man. Some your dad or your family members ever like give a little kid tequila in the tooth?
Nah, nothing.
You never
like
saw that?
Nah, I heard about it, but I
no. But when you're sick, they used to put a lot of alcohol on you. You know, you had a fever, they put alcohol over you. Like
that's your fire one.
No, alcohol can reduce your temperature.
Really?
Yeah, but it gets you drunk too.
But yeah,
it go through your pores.
You can use rubbing alcohol now under their arms.
Can I remember that next time? Are you drunk? No, I'm sick.
You used to put tequila for kids when they were teething too.
Yeah, I remember that one, man. Humphreys. how do you go from working in the fields and traveling with your family to, like, you know, having that thing that in your heart you want to be an actor or a performer?
Well, we all like movies.
Love,
you know,
movies.
That kind of stuff. And as kids, you like performing. But I never saw acting as a craft. Then when I went to Berkeley and I saw Luis Valdez's El Teatro Campesino do a show, not only were they performing, but they were performing characters that were like me. Farm workers, spoke English and Spanish, and the families were very much reminiscent of my families. So we started he had a class at Berkeley that I took. I didn't know who he was at the time. But when I met him, then we actually started a theater company at the university called Hijos del Sol. No, Hijos del Sol? Yeah, something like that. Anyway, so we did productions with him. He directed a piece and stuff. And then he invited me to become go down to the first Teatro Nacional de Aztlán workshop in San Juan Bautista, where his company was. I went. Things went well. He invited me to be part of his company. And then in 78, when he was going to do Zoot Suit, that's when I moved to L.A. So a friend of mine, well, Pepe Serna, he had been in the workshop production of Zoot Suit, and he was no longer going to be in it because we had both auditioned for a movie called Walk Proud. At the time, it was Gangs with Robbie Benson as a Chicano.
I remember that movie, man. That movie, yeah. It was weird that when they jump you in, you got to walk through a straight line.
Like a gauntlet?
Like a gauntlet.
Anyway, so Pepe got the role that we auditioned for, and he said, hey, but, you know, they're doing a play, and Luis Valdez is doing it. You know Luis. Why don't you go and see if there's a role open? So I did. Auditioned, and I got the role of Smiley. And then when the show moved to Hollywood, to the Aquarius Theater, I went really well. And then they were going to do the New York production, Broadway. And I chose to stay here, and I was doing the lead. If I went to New York, I probably would have gotten a supporting role.
Yeah.
So I decided to stay here, and I think I made the right decision because New York didn't go well. And then I stayed in the show. So I worked in that play for a year, and I did every single performance. I think I'm the only actor that ever did every single performance of that show. I got an agent out of it. I got my first movie role out of it.
What's your first movie role?
It was a thing called Borderline with Charles Bronson, and it was Ed Harris's first film also. Yeah, I played Ed Harris's sidekick. Got along well with Charlie Bronson, who at the time was, you know, the highest paid actor in Hollywood.
Those dirty sons of a bitches.
Yeah.
They were kids.
Charlene
Manson.
The comedian Tim Thomerson.
Yeah, you know
Tim Thomerson?
Tall blonde guy.
He used to do a great Charles Bronson.
He would put a beanie on, right?
No. But he pumped and then he would start doing Charlie
Bronson.
Give
some Ed Harris, bro.
Ed Harris.
Is he on Crimson Tide or something?
Truman Show.
No, yeah, the right stuff. He played John Glenn. I worked with him on Nixon also afterwards. You know Nixon the movie?
Yes, I.
He worked on that too, so we connected again. I was going to do another film that he was in called Walker, a real life character that went to Nicaragua. He was in that too. It was an independent film. So anyway, that's how I got to Hollywood, and then the rest was – I got lucky. I worked. I was here for a month, and then I got my first job.
That's awesome, man.
Got an agent, got three – I worked on The Incredible Hulk, a couple of episodes, the first one with Lou Ferrigno. Then from there, you know
– Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like you wouldn't me like when me I make me angry.
Bling.
Speaking of the Hulk, we had the guy that dresses up like the Hulk in Hollywood Boulevard in the show. He's a crazy guy.
Like the monster Bill Bixby?
The monster.
No, the big guy. He hangs around Hollywood Boulevard as the Hulk and takes pictures with people and hustles them, right?
Yeah, his last name was McQueen. What's his first name?
David McQueen.
Who?
David McQueen.
The guy that does the Hulk on Hollywood Boulevard?
No, that's Joe McQueen.
Joe McQueen.
Yeah.
Little brother?
Yeah. Like me when I'm angry.
I used to love that show, man. I used to always end with him hitchhiking. It's funny, always, like you grow older and you start wondering things about the Hulk. Like he always found a pair of pants his size.
Yeah, yeah.
The perfect waist 34.
And yeah, when they bust it open, they always busted at the right places, right?
Yeah,
you know, the waist stayed and part of the legs to cover, and then the rest of it just.
Jenna Chalice do the same.
Even if that happened, it'll be a little leaf that covered it up, huh?
When he was a monster, didn't he lose his genitalia? Because monsters, like figurines, they never have genitalia.
No. Not even dinosaurs.
But he's not really a monster,
like
though.
The creature from the Black Lagoon.
Human.
No,
how did he
genitalia.
Reproduce?
Yeah.
He's got no genitalia.
Beowulf didn't have any?
I remember once.
Superman doesn't have any.
I think the Incredible Hulk was done when they basically, David Banner was getting his ass kicked at this bodybuilding tournament. Then he gets all mad and he chases a dude on stage and everybody's clapping at the Hulk. He's all buff like everybody else, but in green. And everybody's clapping and the Hulk goes, "Rawr!" And they clap more. And like he was posing.
Flexing?
Like he was at a, like Mr. Universe contest.
With know? Or without steroids?
No, probably. They all use steroids, right, Rodrigo?
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm sure they all. There's some.
You coach
that's
them.
That's not normal, dude. Come on.
Some people use steroids to get funnier.
Imagine if there was comedy steroids, though. Come on.
Should be doing up there, buff. Breaking the microphone.
Can you get a comedy implant? Because I like one, really.
I don't know.
Ask somebody.
Clones, that'll work.
And Enrique killed it on weeds.
I killed a lot of people on weeds.
He said they said you're amazing. Felipe could have played the Mexican Hulk. All right, that was not funny.
I remember I seen you on Mars Attacks. That was cool.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I had even forgotten I was in there.
Really?
Yeah. My daughter and I went to see it one time. And we were sitting there eating our popcorn, and all of a sudden she goes, "Hey!" I said, "Oh, that's right."
Sometimes I'm in stuff I never agreed to be on. Like, there was we were at the Comedy Store, and then I was doing that show with Tony Hinchcliffe, Kill Tony. There was a bunch of not amateur comedians, but young comedians who were trying to make a name for themselves, young comics.
Open micers.
So they perform, and then like comedians who've been around for a long time give them critique on, "Oh man, you should quit," or "You should change this joke to that joke." But it's real funny because the guy he's up there taking it, you know? But this guy, this African American comedian I never heard of, he's not funny, probably first time doing stand up comedy. He shows up with a camera crew begging to go on. So he goes on. And then
they filmed him.
They filmed him. They filmed him performing. And then Steve-O was in the back. They interviewed Steve-O. Then they interviewed me for a little while. They interviewed a bunch of people.
None of you know what this is for.
We don't know what the hell's going on. He puts that all in a movie, bro.
A documentary.
All of a sudden
comes out.
It's like IMDb right now. And it goes, and I keep telling this guy, "Listen, man, I never agreed to be on this. I'm not going to even show up to the premiere."
They credited you on the
no red carpet.
Yeah, but it was weird because he was like, they were promoting it, and Felipe was like, "I'm not in this movie." And he said, "Yes, you are. We shot it at the Comedy Store." And Felipe was like, "Oh, that was you? Like, that was for a movie? Like, what? That's so weird." He didn't tell it to anybody.
You never signed the release.
Right? No.
My next word was,
My
next word was, "But you bombed."
It was horrible.
You're the worst comedian on the show.
In history.
If you were like anybody, bro, he's somebody.
I just wondered if they thought they can get away with it by calling it a documentary.
It was Bowfinger.
Is Emilio still doing stand-up?
Every once in a while, we call
it. At your show, that one time he did it?
A long time
ago.
Yeah,
it's been a while.
We're going to have him.
The man in the little boat, Holmes.
Hey, my wife don't take photos like that, eh?
It's called headshots, Holmes.
do you remember the Noche de Risa y Susto events that we used to do at LATC downtown? It was an annual event that we did, and it was a comedy thing centered around the Day of the Dead. And we used to bring in all the Latino comedians. It was the first time George headlined there, too. But everybody used to come. Where were you around that time?
High school. What? Probably in high school.
Are you sure?
Because George, I
met George in 1999, right?
Yeah, because George was doing stand-up in 78.
Because there were young kids that would come by, too,
Those Willie Barcenda.
He was probably the youngest out of the pack back then.
Yeah.
Rudy and Gilbert were older.
Yeah, Willie was there.
Rudy Moreno.
Yeah, they're older.
I know this comedian. Probably Rudy Moreno.
Carlos Oscar.
Remember Lalo Alcaraz? You know Lalo, right?
No.
Lalo?
He's a cartoonist.
Yes.
Yeah, Satris.
Well, he was part of Chicano Secret Service.
Back in the day, huh? Rafael, right? Martinez, Rafael?
They did the show, and so did...
That was 1993.
But you were a comedian yet? You're just starting.
But I remember when I first started...
You were thinking funny then.
Yeah.
When I first started, I was looking at the Alley Weekly to look for open mics, and I would see that CSS, and Willie Barcena told me that it was... Chicano Secret Service, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was Alfonso in that?
That I don't remember. I only remember Lalo.
How about Rafa Martinez, that guy who did the photo from East LA? I think he was in it too.
Oh, you mean Rafa? Maybe not Martinez. Rafa in LA, right?
Yeah.
I can't think of his name.
Rafa Ortiz.
No.
Nah, dude.
Cardenas.
Yeah, dude.
So what was your road to where you are now?
What do you mean?
Well, you asked me where I started, the road to where I am now.
Oh, I started when I came out of rehab. I came out of rehab and I went to, I picked up an Alley Weekly.
You're in your early 20s.
Early 20s. And I saw open mic, but I didn't know what to do. So,
but why comedy?
Okay, I love stand-up comedy, man. Rodney Dangerfield. When I grew up, everything was that was cool came out when I was a kid, like VHS, DVD, CDs,
And in between was Laserdisc.
Yeah. Those were expensive.
If you had
man.
Money.
They
you
were
had
so
mega
expensive.
Bucks.
My cousin.
Hey, I still have a player and discs. I have the three original Star Wars.
Wow. Those are badass.
Yeah. Balling back then, huh?
How about the album with Peter Frampton on it?
Well, I have Yellow Submarine, too.
And another movie that was a blue disc was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, the movie.
Yes.
See, my cousins.
West Side Story.
Yeah.
The Criterion Collection has a lot of great stuff.
You see, that I was dumb. So, you know, if you want to borrow somebody, I had a VHS that I borrowed from somebody, and I don't know, they would break the clip on the side of the VHS, they could cut it, and then the VHS would be 6 hours now. So you could record 6 hours of stuff. So they had 7 hours of comedy in it. Paul Rodriguez, Howie Mandel, Robin Williams, other good HBO specials. And I would just, I memorized all the jokes.
But you also listened to the Bill Cosby album.
We had 7 hours of porn, too. The worst porn ever.
That was it. Then you just kept trying and trying for open mic.
But I was funny around my friends, but not like the class clown. I used to open up for him. I used to sell his merch.
What did I say? It's HBO. I saw you on HBO, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the second special.
That was my second special. My wife and I, we produced it, and we sold it to HBO. We said, take this. There's nothing out there. But we already have George Lopez. Okay, maybe we could promote mine while his is on. And they did.
They did.
But that wasn't my idea. No. What's up, fool? I get no respect. Oh, Rodney Dangerfield. Mr. Pellini. Yeah, so I love stand-up comedy, man. Like, we watched a lot of comedy growing up. We used to watch the Spanish shows, Los Polivoces, and Chiquilladas. Okay. Woo, woo. Chespirito, El Chavo del Ocho.
Man, I'm from the Cantinflas era.
All the Spanish ones, bro. Cantinflas. That movie where we played the cop, Capulina.
Viruta y Capulina.
Viruta, yeah. And, of course, Tintan. My dad would tell me about that, fool.
That would go back to, like,
Tintan, Resortes. All the Carperos.
That's where what's the name? Cantinflas started out in the Carpas, right?
Yeah.
So how do you go from all that to Blood In, Blood Out? Bound by Honor, by the way, was the real name of the movie.
The original name?
When they were shooting that movie, I remember it because I just came out of rehab and I wanted to avoid everybody. Like, I didn't want to go back to the Cholos, you know, or my homies, or
get away from brown people.
Get away from everybody from the hood. And I was dating somebody. No, somebody from an NA meeting. He wanted to drive all the way to the project. Nah, man. You just drop me off right here. Drop me off in the corner. And I walk in. Because every time anybody would drop me off in front of my mom's house, five people would run up trying to sell crack. They're all friends. But they didn't know. But then they will see me and go, oh shit, it's Batman. Then they all run like roaches when you turn the lights on. But I had everybody drop me off. Then I'm walking and I see an actress in the movie. I think she played Damien Chapa's mom, Miklo. She played the mom.
Okay.
And it's weird because I thought we were the same age. All right.
Jenny Gago.
And I know her from she did a mini series that was badass called The Camarena story,
wife was in that.
Benicio del Toro played Caro Quintero.
It's called Drug Wars.
Yeah,
Kiki was my next door neighbor.
He's from Calexico.
What's his
name?
Enrique Camarena.
Oh, you really?
Yeah, he was my next door neighbor.
So you grew up with him. You know him?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, his mom and my mom were friends. He had two other brothers. One of them was killed in Vietnam. He was killed in drug wars. Unfortunately, the only son that was left was into drugs.
Oh, yeah? What was it like, man? Did you guys know that he was undercover?
I hadn't heard about what he was doing for years. I just knew that he was working for the government with the DEA. But that was about it. And I didn't learn a lot about how involved he was until afterwards.
So That's why I found out about Blood and Blood Out. I didn't know Blood and Blood. Well, I'm walking, right? I see Johnny Gago. And I, you know me, bro. If I know you, I shoot out the last thing I saw you on. Oh, my God. You were in that show. I saw, man, I was hooked. That miniseries about the drug wars.
They're redoing that, too.
She goes, yeah. And then I saw one of the homies from the neighborhood named Cesar Quiroga. And I remember that fool got shot in the face one time, and then they stitched it up, and the guy said, "Who shot him?" Said, "I'm sorry." That fool, he was like an extra in Blood In, Blood Out, and those housing projects where they were shot, where Jenny Gago lived with Miklo, mm-hmm. That's my hood, man. That's where I grew up.
Pico Aliso?
Yeah, but that side right there is called Pico Gardens. Okay. But the other side is called Pico Aliso. But that right there, that's my hood. I had just came out of rehab. And I didn't know they were shooting no movie up there. I was like, God damn, it must be crazy shooting here in a fucking biting ass neighborhood. And so I see him and he goes, "What are you doing, man?" "Oh, man, they're shooting this movie, Bound by Honor." He goes, "What are you doing in it?" He goes, "Oh, man." He goes, I did all the tattoos for everybody here. He goes, "I did the henna tattoo. I did all fake tattoos." Wow. So I'm thinking, man, I go to rehab to quit drugs. These guys are over here being gangbangers. Hooked on drugs, they're fucking working in movies.
Makeup artist.
I quit nothing, man.
Doing it, huh?
For real, bro. He put all the tattoos, and so they shot it in right there.
Yeah, it was Mark Sanchez was one of the makeup artists. Kenny Diaz, he was the main guy. Phil Monty, and then there was what's his name. He was just at the – because we had the reunion, the cast reunion.
Where at?
Over at Plaza de la Cultura.
Damn.
Taylor Hackford was their director. His wife, Helen Mirren, was there.
He produced a lot of stuff, Taylor Hackford, huh?
Yeah. He got an Oscar for Ray.
He's married to Helen Mirren now?
Helen Mirren, yeah. Wow. So she made it to the reunion. Victor Rivers was there. Danny couldn't make it, and Miklo was in Europe.
Germany.
Benjamin – was in San Francisco, I think he was working. So he didn't make it. But Jesse did.
Jesse Borrego.
Yeah. Crucito.
Crucito, man.
It was a fun time.
When we had Damon Chop on the show, we asked him about, because most of the big questions that people ask, especially the fans, because everybody watches it at least 5 times a year. I know I watch it like 5 times a year. Bro.
Blood and Blood Out.
The director's cut?
No, because
it's even longer.
He told us. I told him a saga. He said that we always wonder why they're so close to American Me, and Damon said that the original book or screenplay was huge, and he said that it just almost took the Latino side and someone took the white side or J.P. Morgan side.
My understanding was that it. Originally, it was going to be a trilogy.
Wow.
Like The Godfather.
Oh!
So that it
that
would
be badass.
So that it would begin like it American Me in the 40s, and then it would go to the period where the main gang was created, and then it would be the revenge of my character getting killed.
Yeah.
And the daughter actually exacting revenge. That was going to be the third one. But... it never happened because whatever creative differences or political differences or financial things happen. So Universal got one story and Disney got Blood and Blood Out.
Wow. That would have been badass, huh? Mm-hmm.
Crazy, man.
Yeah, there's a lot of calls for another part. But I've met and I've spoken with Jimmy Baca, Santiago Baca, the poet. He played my celly, Gato, in the movie. He owns part of the rights to the story because a lot of it is his life. But then, of course...
He's Jesse then, huh? He's Jesse, kind of a mixture of Jesse character, the painter?
Yeah, basically, yeah. The artist.
Crucito.
Although he's a poet and an author. He was doing a reading of his work down in San Marcos, and we sat and talked, and basically we were trying to figure out, is there a possibility of doing another one? And Jesse Borrego has tried also. Jimmy's idea was for us to get a hotel room somewhere, sit down, and try to hammer out a story, but we've yet to do that. Because it always takes money. You know that.
Funding, man.
All right, man. Anybody out there, man, who's a baller,
who won the lottery.
who's making a lot of money.
Deep pockets.
Deep pockets. We're talking $55,000 up front right now to write the script. Easily, all right? And we'll make you a partner. We'll give you we'll make you a producer. And we'll give you 5 points in the movie. And also, you'll get to be a backstage. Anybody in your family that wants to be in a movie, we'll get them a walk on stage. All right? And if you have a lowrider, all your cars.
Unofficial offers, by the way.
Unofficial. $50,000. Yeah. Will that be enough to write the script?
Absolutely. To produce
the movie, this one, man, we're going to go eFundMe. We're probably going to have to go knock on a couple of houses, man. We're going to need $1 million, pretty much. $1 million just to lure names to say, hey, man, guess what, man? Okay, we got fucking... we got Emilio Rivera now, man. We got
Willie Barcena.
Oh, shit. Stop it.
Well, Danny was in it already.
Yeah, man. He played Apache.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I told Jimmy Baca and Jesse, I said, you know, but my character's dead.
Oh, man.
Oh, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's right. And I said, well, yeah, but, you know, he has a twin brother.
Come back. Damn, bro, you come back like Obi-Wan Kenobi as a ghost, bro.
I was going to say, man, let's just turn it into a zombie movie.
Now, funny, we were thinking, you know, like, because we have no money either. But we're talking about just making it like, we saw this crazy play on my birthday called Point Break Live. And it was about...
Point Break Live?
Yeah, yeah, it's about Point Break. The movie? Yeah, Keanu Reeves. Yeah. People question his acting
Patrick
abilities.
Patrick Swayze, right?
Yeah, Patrick Swayze.
And Keanu Reeves, you know, and Gary Busey. But you know how people question Keanu Reeves' acting ability? Give some Keanu Reeves, bro.
I don't really know how to do Keanu Reeves, but I know they say he does the same character in every
movie. But do him in that movie with the time traveling. Oh, man.
Oh, Bill and Ted's?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Miss Diaz.
Yeah, I think Parenthood, too.
Yeah, Parenthood is great.
Yeah, he was good at Parenthood.
Parenthood!
Oh, my God. Parenthood's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Parenthood, and he was good as the older brother, River's Edge.
Well, he was.
Yeah, that's
he was
a good movie, dude.
He was also perfect for. He was perfect for The Matrix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bad movie.
Matrix is
too,
badass. I'm getting a goosebump on that one. Yeah, but The River's Edge, bro.
That's a good
that movie.
That movie's
so good because all the loser kids in that movie could be losers in real life, bro.
Well, that's funny.
That guy killed his girlfriend, and everybody knew about it, but nobody called the cops because they were all scared.
I remember.
You remember that movie, right?
Which one?
I think Art Linkletter. Richard Linkletter?
No, River's Edge. It wasn't Richard.
Oh, yeah, River's Edge, yeah. Yeah,
it was shot in California.
Mentone?
Where?
Mentone?
I thought it was
Mendocino.
That's a based on a true story, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the killing of the.
So, in that play, these people get a bunch of people together to play other parts, but the funny part is the Keanu Reeves part is given to somebody in the audience.
Okay. Yeah, they randomly choose.
And then a girl with placards has all his lines. So that guy, it's funny because having somebody just read them.
But the rest of the people,
are good actors.
No, yeah,
okay.
And they look like the people. And then when they're surfing.
But it's interactive with the audience. And like you get
spray people with water and they put coconut butter on your body so you can smell like you're surfing. And then in that scene
where
Gary Busey goes, you know what? It's going to be a meatball sandwich. During that scene of the play, they sell a meatball sandwich to everybody. So nice, we were thinking of doing the same thing with Blood In, Blood Out, live.
Why not?
And having like, you know, whatever, you know, having people play your parts. But when we do have the cash,
you
invite you in to play your part one time.
Yeah,
but choose anybody who's half white or looks white, Miklo in the audience. Yeah. We have the same thing. Pretty much doing the same thing. And then, but the scene where Miklo shows up and goes, Simón Quesijo, and they're eating los tamales. Everybody gets a tamale. And then along the way,
they're making some in my house right now.
Oh, they're good, man. Oh, man, I'm sorry if I, every time, the first time I ran into you was at the San Rodrigo's that baseball game.
Oh, with the
Hachiros,
yeah, Richard Montañez.
Montañez.
Oh, at the Laker game.
Yeah, it was a Laker game.
I was like a rookie there, bro. Like, just in awe, bro.
Have you had Richard on?
No, man. We've been trying.
No, we keep trying, but like,
you know they're
schedule,
doing his movie.
Yeah.
Movie of life.
The guy put in two. He just gave us $2 for cheap times.
For cheap times.
Hey, it's funny, man, boy. I went to a wrestling match in downtown LA. I don't know if you ever go to those.
Wrestling? Like Lucha Libre?
Lucha Libre.
Yeah.
No.
You should go there. I mean, you should be the announcer. You know how many people recognize you? They'll be like, no way! Because some of the other people, like.
No way.
Some of the people, some of the people they put up there. They recognize them, but nah, man. But you're like to us, you're like an icon. Eh?
Yeah, man.
To us, it's like you know, like we're
your
like
icon is a four letter
we're
word.
Like Star Trek. Like you know, there's trackies for Star Trek. There's crazy people who like Star Trek. There's people who like crazy who like Star Wars.
What are we called?
There's people who love Blood and Blood Out.
Bloodies
all over the world.
Yeah, all over the world. Yeah. And, yeah.
And we have listeners who
look for what? That Muslim chicks.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then there's there's people who love Big Lebowski, and every little tiny piece of that movie people remember. And I think what's his name, Michael Pena, the actor. He say he saw Blood and Blood Out, and he said he wanted to be an actor when he saw it. The guy from Chicago,
Right, yeah. Right. He played Cesar Chavez.
Your role was very, very political. Changed, right? In the movie, you got very political, and you wanted to unite both sides.
Yes, he was a very
and make it strong, huh?
Yeah, he was very well read. He read Dostoevsky, Nietzsche.
That's like the act of war.
Aztec thought and culture. So he's very well versed in every culture, and he was a vegetarian.
I'm vegan, bro. People don't believe me.
Yeah, he's vegetarian. That's a very deliberate choice because in the joint,
that's another one, bro.
Are money
people been asking for that for a long time? A Blood In Blood Out convention, bro, where we get in everybody from American Me and everybody from Blood In Blood Out in one day and have a meet and greet, and we'll watch all the movies together back to back and kidnap you guys and put you on stage and ask questions.
It should be like. Blood In Blood Out Con, right?
Comic-Con. Oh, my God.
Comic-Con.
Bloody Con.
You have no idea. Oh, anyway. So
Sangre por Sangre Con.
So I was at the wrestling match, and I took a picture with this guy who looked like the Junkyard Dog, right? A black wrestler. And then he goes, Jack, man, could you pretend you're choking me, man? And, man, if we start choking me, bro, but kind of hard, he goes, this is for cheap times, man. Are you fucking serious? It's only a movie, dog.
That shit was funny, dude.
Hey, bro, did you think that that they were going to kill him in a movie?
I thought someone was gonna come up, dude. Because everybody started.
Look at this guy. He knows.
It's not knows. He knows it because you're trying to reunite both sides.
I'm the killer over here.
And then I knew there was something fishy with that comb too. And then everybody's like, they started like, not, you kind of feel some distance. You know what I mean from the leader and stuff because he's kind of getting soft and we're hard. That's what I felt. I knew something was gonna happen.
Yeah, I didn't know nothing, bro. I was shocked. I was angry, bro. But nah, this is bullshit now, man.
Really, fool?
I was surprised as hell.
Because usually,
yeah, a lot of people get upset about it.
What's the name of the actor? He's a known actor, huh? The actor who killed you in the movie?
It's Teddy.
Yeah, he's
Teddy
gone in 60 seconds.
Yeah,
he was Lenny Has Plenty.
He plays Satchel Paige.
Huh? He is great.
He's in Good Times.
He passed away 2 weeks after we finished that man.
So he never got to see it?
I don't know. He might have seen a cut, maybe an early, but I doubt it. I doubt it. It's too bad. He was really great to work with. Really great. Although he was a little bit, you know, uncoordinated with the ice pick, and he actually got me.
Damn.
Even though I was wearing something, it still, he couldn't control it well enough, and it slipped to the side.
With arthritis, bro. Just drill it in there.
Yeah, well, he was kind of shaking. So they had one of the stunt guys, African American stunt guy, did it actually.
Did you guys shoot in actual prison, or you shot in Allen County Jail?
San Quentin.
You were in there, man?
Yeah. In fact, we shot in one of Danny Trejo's old cells.
Oh, wow.
It was very intense. People were...
Did you feel like his graffiti one day, Danny Tacos, Danny Trejo Tacos?
Well, it was a working prison, so...
In Donna's homes.
Whatever was going on, those guys were going to take care of business, and they did while we were there.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty intimidating. The first thing that gets you is they have you sign a document that you agree, that you understand, that if you're taken hostage for any situation, that the government will do nothing
to negotiate
for your freedom.
Yeah.
So you're basically signing away your life, and it sobers you up. But certainly, because Jimmy was in the movie, Jimmy was an ex-con, Danny's an ex-con, and there was another guy in there who's an ex-con. They were going through some serious PTSD while we were shooting it.
Yeah, being in there?
Absolutely.
Like they were like, they thought they were actually back in there in a way?
Well, you kind of, you know, we actually, when we finished filming there, they built an exact replica of the tiers at Raleigh Studios.
Wow.
And so we were shooting in there. And while we were shooting in San Quentin, there were routines that we had to follow every single day. They had to count every screwdriver, every wrench, everything that we brought in, and it had to be counted out. So everything was working according to the prison rules. Everywhere we walked, we had to be escorted. Everywhere we went, we had to wear certain clothing to identify us as actors over a period of time, because certain things happened that we were also identified as inmates because we were dressed like everybody else. So little by little, we had to change. We had to wear certain things, like a lanyard eventually, or a cut jersey, like a football jersey, to identify us. Well, once you get into that system and you're there for quite a while and you leave, and we're working in Raleigh Studios, when I walked, we finished shooting one of the scenes, and I was walking out of my cell, and I started looking for my lanyard. Just goes to show you how quick your mind adjusts to that kind of routine. I started weeping because I felt like an inmate. Like I was conditioned to look for certain things, to behave a certain way. And it just made me really sad for so many of our gente that end up there, many of them for trivial reasons, because of prejudice or what have you, or the criminal justice system is stacked against us. It made me really upset, angry, and hurt that we have to go through that as a people, day in and day out, like African Americans do too, you know.
There's a guy that came to my comedy show in Phoenix, and his uncle had just come out of prison, and his uncle got locked up when I was a kid, bro. He just came out. He shot at a LAPD helicopter in Boyle Heights because they were chasing him, and he just started shooting at it. I don't know if he shot it down, but he shot at it. And I think he did 38 years. I mean, he just came out. I mean, he was locked up when I was a kid. He was locked up when I was a drug addict. He was locked up when I started doing comedy. He was, man, pretty much just, yeesh. I was like, God. I saw a photo of him. I was like, wow, old man, bro. Old man with that stare, like he could see a mile away.
Yeah, yeah, they're like sharks. They're like no expression.
I photo like this. Like.
There's one thing I did notice was those guys are very respectful for one thing. If they bump into you or anything like that, there's always a excuse me, you know, dispensame carnal, you know, because the bottom line to every argument is murder. A matter of survival. And so you've got to know, like guards, for example, they don't have any weapons. The only thing that keeps them alive is respect for the inmates. And if they get out of line, well, what's to protect them? So inmates are no different too. You know? They respect each other because the bottom line to arguing is murder.
Were there that extra who started off working with you guys then quit because they were scared?
extras?
Yeah.
We had no extras.
Oh, no?
They were all inmates. They were all the real inmates.
Wow, because at American Media they had extras, bro. They quit. So you got to have real inmates hanging out?
When we were in the prison, all those guys around us, they're all inmates.
Well behaved, right?
Yeah, and very protective of us. Because, again, that was a working prison, so they had their issues. So they told us, if you guys, they came to us discreetly and said, look, stuff is going on, and if anything ever happens, you guys just get behind us.
You know who else in the movie too, bro? Billy Bob Thornton.
Oh, yeah.
Billy Bob.
And then
Lightning.
Little Nazi, huh?
Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, huh? Then the old man, what's his name? When I walked up to you at the parade, I said, I don't want his pork chop. I want his life.
Lanny Flaherty.
Lanny Flaherty.
Yeah, he was really good. You know, those guys, because they were real inmates, when we're doing that scene, those guys thought that he really was the guy like that he was Big Al. And they asked me. And, you know, to them, it's real. And so the question that kept coming up to me was, we are going to kill him, right? They were serious. They were asking, really, this guy, we're going to kill him, right? You know?
Did he improvise those lines, or those lines were written when you had the Chow Hao?
They're written, but, you know, you can improvise, too.
He was good.
Yeah,
huh?
He's that little piece of sunshine over there.
He's great.
Man, you're on the wrong train.
Yeah. Sorry, no tortilla.
And then you did Mi Familia, which I saw. Yeah. That's a long movie,
yeah,
too.
I played the lawyer there, right?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Oh, man.
From convict to a lawyer.
We did a show in Modesto, California, and it was the night that the Raiders lost because of the of the tuck and roll rule.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So everybody that was a driver,
New England, right?
Yes, everybody that was a driver, everybody that was a security guard was a goddamn Oakland Raider fan, and if you're a 49er fan, you're getting cursed out. Those guys started arguing in a van. I thought they were gonna pull over and fight. Oh, so you're a 49er fan now? I've always been a 49er fan, motherfucker. Oh, so you started starting shit because my Raiders fucking lost, huh? At least you're honest about who you like with your shitty-ass team, right? And arguing and shit. Man, y'all want to hang out afterwards? Nah, man, just drop us off.
We're good.
So well, what's it?
In Modesto, California. And we did at the Modesto, the State Theater. And Joe Diaz is watching Mi Familia. That's right, cocksuckers. My favorite movie of all time. He's watching Mi Familia, My Familia, and he watches that movie over and over. He calls in for that part where Isaac Morales, Jimmy Smith's son, is all naked.
Yeah.
And he's going like this, bichi gringo, because you're married to a white chick, eh?
Yeah, right. The taquitos.
Yeah.
That was the funny scene.
That's a good movie, you know, man.
The thing is that little boy, there were two kids.
One of them
was the one that was that kid yelling and stuff like that. There was another little boy that they had to do the nude scene.
Yeah. Rodrigo, he was 8.
Yeah.
Still getting residuals.
But
happy news.
We were having trouble with the little boy who was going to do the kicking and stuff like that. And so he wouldn't come out of it, you know. So unless you have kids, you don't know how to get them to do things, right? So I went over to talk to the kid, right? And I said, hey, mijo, how you doing? Good, I'm okay. You know, that's a little tough to do, I know. He says, but listen, do you like the Power Rangers? He says, yeah, man. His eyes lit up. He says, which one's your favorite one? Because my daughter, she really likes the green one. He says, yeah, and I like this one. He says, and they do all those kicks and stuff. Huh? He says, yeah, go out there and do the Power Rangers, man. Show them how it's done. Do the Power Rangers. He gets up there and he starts, yeah, pinches. He goes, watch him.
Killed the scene.
Yeah, so that was his inspiration. Great, that's
funny. That movie shot right there in Boyle Heights, right under the bridge. It looked like it's under the bridge.
Yeah, yeah.
My wife is right neighborhood.
Yeah.
I know, like,
just like Blood and Blood.
I grew up in Boyle Heights, and like I've been living my hair my whole life that I know, like, basically, I could start my own app and let you know what street you're getting off at and what gang is in that neighborhood.
What colors?
Yeah, like, I know exactly, man. Like, I know that they shot that at white fans.
You know, I was talking to my wife because she grew up in Boyle Heights. We were talking about when the street Cesar Chavez used to be Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, back in the day.
Used to be Brooklyn. But the original name was Chavez.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the original name was Chavez. It was named after a city councilman, I think, back in the early days of Los Angeles. His name was Chavez. That's why it's
Chavez Ravine.
Chavez Ravine.
Interesting.
It was named after him.
So when you started the Latino Theater Company.
Along with Jose Luis Valenzuela.
Yeah, and
Evelina Fernandez, Sal Lopez.
When you start something like that, you started for what? To start produce your own plays and act in it with your friends and produce and put them on stage? Or
yeah, well.
Or how did that work?
To create an alternative to the stereotype.
Yeah.
And also to.
All your roles are positive. Well, even though you're a gangbanger.
Have the ability to play lead roles also. I mean, when in a movie was I going to be able to play Ruben Salazar?
You know, I'm waiting for that, man.
World-class journalist.
Well, we had that other guy right here, bro. The guy who wrote the book, The Revolt of the Cockroach People.
Oscar Zeta Costa.
We had the director of the documentary.
We had the director of the documentary. What is that movie? I can play him, bro.
A friend of mine that wrote the script. He had the rights originally, and the script was really good.
Did you know the guy, Oscar?
I didn't, no. But he worked with, this friend of mine had worked with Hal Ashby, who was huge back in his day. Won multiple Oscars for his films. And he was Hal Ashby's creative associate. He taught him how to work computers into filmmaking. Mm. And Rick, his name is Rick Padilla. Rick got the rights, met the family, and wrote the script for the movie. And it's a terrific script. But there's always been issues between the family and producers about how to be portrayed. And you know, the same thing with Blood and Blood Out and American Me. Those kinds of issues come up. And also because they're Latino projects, the funding is always missing. Yeah. If you're going to be able to do it the way you want to do it, you have to do it outside of the studio system. So you have to find your own money. If you do it through the studio system, well, then you're going to get Brad Pitt to play it.
Yeah. Or playing The Wall, Tom Cruise.
Like when they offered Johnny Depp the role of Pancho Villa, you know.
He turned it down, right?
He turned it down. He said, don't want some honky from Kentucky playing in Mexico?
Yeah, Marlon Brando played Zapata.
Played Zapata, yeah. Well, Robbie Benson didn't walk proud. Yeah. But that's been the norm, although it's changing little by little. The problem, of course, is always the Hollywood storytelling formula. If you do
La Llorona.
If you do Oscar Zeta Costa, they're going to portray them like in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. It's the drug thing. You know?
Yeah.
It's the dark side that you want to play because they say that's more exciting. Well, of course, like with Latino projects, well, we got to do the cartel thing. We got to do the drug thing, you know? Rather than do Ruben Salazar or Cesar Chavez the right way or Oscar Zeta Costa or Dolores Huerta.
That's funny, but like a Latina or a black African American woman can never be in a role where she's leading without something holding her back in a movie. You know, like but she gotta go take care of her old grandma, she gotta take care of her daughter somewhere. She got a crazy
story
brother.
Where Whoopi Goldberg was pitching the Rosa Parks story, and they wanted a white person to play her.
You're killing me.
And she said. She's black.
She was very light-skinned, Whoopi.
But, you know, it's like that's the mentality. I think Guillermo del Toro was doing a Q&A where he was talking about pitching a story also, and he had written a script, and he's meeting with these execs, and they're asking him, they're saying, that we'd love the story. Well, so-and-so could be in it. Yeah. And who's going to direct it? Well, me. He said, but you have an accent. Dwell on that one. You have an accent, so you can't direct the movie that you wrote.
How the hell Mel Gibson, what can write Apocalypto, bro?
I don't know.
He's got the money.
Yeah, resources, dude.
He had his own money.
Not anymore, right?
That's an independent producer. Yeah. You know? He and Spielberg are probably the only two that could do it.
And yeah, man, but you got to make at least 10 movies where they pay you $30 million and they were all successful.
Yeah.
And they believe in your ass. You know what, man? I have this movie where
Super Lotto.
These vampires, Super Lotto. Super Lotto. The movie or the actual Super Lotto?
No, win the Mega Million. Or what was the one where they won the $1 billion?
Yeah. $1 billion, wow.
Powerball.
What's up, fool? Are you active on social media, Instagram?
Not very much.
We got to get you that, man. We got to get you a little page.
I have Instagram, I have Twitter, and I have Facebook, but I don't get in there a lot. You know, everybody gets news from social media, and they think everything's true.
They do, bro. Like, I saw a thing of Rest in Peace, Penny Marshall, and it was not Penny Marshall's photo, bro. It was that comedian girl from Brooklyn 99.
Yeah, Chelsea, you know, they'll have her.
Chelsea Peretti.
They'll have her selling, kids out of a pizza store, too, you know. Even though she's dead, poor thing.
Oh, man. It's funny, man. When I did a movie called I'm Not Like That No More. And in 2009, but it was funny, like, I was doing another movie with Paul Rodriguez, then we went straight to Netflix.
A Million to Juan.
No, A Million to Juan, it was...
The Departed? Deported.
And I gave everybody my CD in the whole movie, bro. Like, I made friends with everybody. Paul Rodriguez, everybody, gave everybody a fucking movie. The producer of that movie wanted to do a movie CD.
That's the one with... Jack Nicholson?
No, this is
Departed movie.
It was called The Deported.
Deported.
Yeah. His was The Deported.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was like, the movie was close to Boy East LA.
Nick Turturro is the lead.
Nick Turturro is the lead, and he gets deported because they think he's Mexican.
Yeah.
And then me and Paul Rodriguez play these.
Like more than East LA?
Yeah. Kind of like that.
Me and Paul Rodriguez
play
these crazy cowboys in Mexico that give them shitty jobs, like in Boy East LA.
You're kind of like his pre-Coyotes, right? Like you're setting him up doing work to raise money.
Yeah, so, man, I learned how to act in that movie, and I twisted my ankle. Should have told somebody.
I actually did the music video with Cheech for Born in East LA.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The music we shot in Tijuana. That was really cool. Production company was Cuckoo Bananas.
Orale. Born East LA. So you have a Twitter, a Facebook?
So he doesn't do yes. that much.
Did you have a Facebook?
Yes, I do.
What's your name on Facebook?
Enrique Castillo.
Enrique Castillo,
same
man.
Same thing on Instagram?
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, because I tried to look you up on Instagram.
I think it's under the title. I think one of them is the name of the book, the novel that I wrote, The Dead of Summer. Dead of Summer, something underscore like that. My wife has them all.
Okay.
So... The producer of that movie, he hired this guy named Kristen Sesma, and he paid him some cash, and he turned my CD comedy album, which was 70 minutes, 60 minutes, 30 minutes, actually. He converted that into an actual script based on everything he heard on the comedy. He just used all the ideas for my comedy. And the guy actually was serious, bro. We shot the movie, but he did a script, and we actually shot the movie, and Paul Giamatti played my father. We shot it in 9 days. It went nowhere, but we actually did it. And
that's the bottom line.
Me and Lisa, sooner or later, we're going to rebuy the movie and redo it ourselves.
I think buy the rights and combine it with a special or something later.
Yeah.
You don't want to reshoot it. It's old material now.
But. That's the whole idea, is to keep doing stuff. You know, you get better that way and put it out there. There's a lot of windows of exhibition now. You know, before it was just the theaters.
Yeah.
Maybe television. There were three networks.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But now you can watch Roku has their own channel, bro. You could be a star on Roku.
Roku, Roku, all that stuff. Well, what are you doing right now, Mr. Castillo?
Well, I did, In Other Words, the romantic comedy that's probably out next year. There's the pilot that we did for Tijuana, the series, that's going to be at Sundance or at Slam Dance. And then there's a kind of a sci-fi thing that I did. Danny Trejo's in it also, called The Green Ghost. That will be out next year also, directed by Michael Olmos, Eddie's adopted son.
If anybody like who are listening or watching, we got people here like hitting us up from Minnesota, a bunch of like crazy.
I did a show in Minnesota.
They want to get a hold of you. They're going to get a hold of you at Facebook.
Yes.
Yeah. But you also have a publicist, right?
Yes. Brenda.
Man, it was cool, man. We saw you on the parade.
Don't ask me her number.
Bro. It was you. Because I saw you
Brenda
first.
Herrera of the Herrera Agency.
Bro, when I was on the Christmas parade, I saw Enrique Castillo first. No, I saw him third. Before him, I saw the guy from Boulevard Nights.
Richard
Iñiguez.
Iñiguez.
And then I saw a guy that was in Chico and the Man, a veteran. And his car. Then I saw this fool. I was like, what? And I'm in this fucking parade. I've never been on shit. I was like, it was badass, bro. I never been in a parade, especially like in East L.A., my neighborhood.
Well, you had the Mexican Independence parade.
You never done the Boyle Heights parade? One.
No. I didn't even know there was one.
Me neither. It happened like a week ago, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it was a week ago.
It's small.
You know, it was when you were in.
The first time somebody mentioned you. They said, hey, you know, have you seen Felipe Esparza? And I automatically thought, because they said he's doing comedy. And I said, he's doing comedy? And they said, yeah, he's doing comedy. He's really good. Let's go see him. And I said, Felipe Esparza? Because there was a Felipe Esparza del Teatro Campesino. And they said, because you know him. Because they said, you know him. You know Felipe Esparza. And I said, yeah, I know Felipe Esparza. And then I saw you. And I said,
Teatro Campesino. Bro.
It's his son.
Yeah, what did you eat? Because you got younger.
Kale.
Yeah, man. Rodrigo, you got shows?
No, I got some in January around here in West Covina, but I don't have any the details.
How's your podcast doing?
Good, man. Doing number 50.
Cracking it up. Lisa Esparza? Enchilada casserole?
No enchilada casserole.
No tamales?
No. I will be making tamales this weekend. And pozole. Maybe champurro.
Shout out. Okay, man. Shout out to Alex DeLarge. He's right there, a big fan. He bought a bunch of, I saw that food. He spent like $500 on toothpastes, maxi pads, mm-hmm. and all kinds of stuff, bro. And he'll donate it. But also.
Jacked our style. No.
Yeah, anyway. So December 24th. 10 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock?
8 o'clock in the morning.
8 o'clock in the morning. We're all going to meet up.
Montebello Park.
Oh, he spent $1,400.
On Christmas Eve?
Yeah, and we're going to go
on
8
Christmas
in the morning.
Christmas Eve morning, yeah.
Was the original style lowriders?
Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a lowrider, but most of these are
park
clubs.
We're
going to
be able to at least 100 lowriders. And they're all going to be filled with stuff for the homeless people.
And they're cruising from Montebello Park
to Whittier,
Skid Row.
All the way to Skid Row. We did it last year. We had a big motorcade. We stopped the streets. I think we had no permit for that, but somebody was stopping the streets.
Somebody was helping. Everybody was helping out.
Yeah, so you're welcome to come to Enrique Castillo. And if you show up, man, we'll make sure we'll put you in a limousine. We'll put you on a nice lowrider, convertible, for everybody can see you.
Yeah.
But it's not a sanctioned parade. We just these guys have been doing it for
year.
A while.
Third or fourth year.
Just hanging out.
And you just pass out. Everybody brings different things, and we just pass out stuff to the homeless down.
But some of these cars, Rodrigo, there was a one of those 1940 bakery trucks. And the fool had it all primered out like it looked in 1930.
Like the Helms Bakery truck?
Yes. Yeah. He had it all brown, like a UPS truck, all fixed up. And the inside was, man, you could put pan inside, bro. You remember those, though?
Yeah.
Boop!
I saw one on the 210 freeway. It was on a flatbed truck. They were taking it somewhere for an exhibit or something. It was beautiful. Helms Bakery.
Yeah.
In Atlanta, Georgia, at
there
the mall.
There was one in Atlanta,
There's an old one, like a 1951, like a little tiny little bus. What's up, fool? I'll be at the Ontario Improv. Lisa, who's
we're
coming?
Go see you there.
Are you coming? We got your second show?
Yeah, he's coming on Thursday, I think. Yeah,
Robbie, the 27th. Nice. Rodrigo? You ready?
We've got
we're
Rodrigo.
Bringing all the tomatoes and the
just take them off the can.
Rodrigo's hosting, and then we've got Johnny Roque doing a spot, Chris Estrada, Rachel Wolfson, and then you.
It's a lot of fools.
Anyways, a lot of fools, but it'll be funny show.
Also, in Denver, Colorado, we have Lydia Popovich, Hater Tuesday, sweet. Rodrigo Torres, and myself.
And Johnny doing too.
And Johnny too?
Mm-hmm, Johnny.
Orale. That'll be tight.
Yeah. Hell yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Nice shirt, man. What's that?
Is he there? No, we got it over there in Yosemite. I was going to ask you, is your theater company still going strong?
I'm not part of the company anymore, but okay. That theater now is still running, the LATC.
Okay.
They do productions all the time.
Right on.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Also, Christmas Eve, December 24th. I don't know if I said New Year's Eve.
No, you said Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve, December 24th, Montebello Park.
In the morning.
At 8 o'clock. Even if you can't cruise with us, if you have stuff to bring over, just bring it over. And we're going to all be down in Skid Row. And there's no way we're gonna. That street is gonna be nothing but low riders. So if you wanna stop by, man, and just stop by, man. Say hello.
Is that the same as Montebello Park?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Para que no se confundan.
Yeah. I'm trying to say that
you have Montebello and Montebello.
Well, Montebello is how you're supposed to say it.
Really, I thought it was an Italian word. No. I thought it was Montebello.
But then we get all, you know, Kelly,
you know what kills
it's like Los Feliz. I like that
you mentioned that shit because that shit irks me, bro. When I'm in Paso Robles and I saw that lady doing the news and she said Paso Robles.
How can you live there?
Paso Robles.
I put my head down, bro.
I was
that's a disrespect to everybody who has ever plowed in that field.
I was stuck in an airport, a very tiny airport in New Mexico one time going to a film.
Been there, dog.
With another actress, right? And we were just sitting there for so long, we just started talking. She's a gacha. So we were talking about the project we were doing and, you know, because a bunch of us Latinos were in it. And we started talking about language. And I said, well, you know, in this country, the English only thing, I said, you can't live in this country and not be multilingual. Some of us do it better than others, but you can't just have English here. And she says, what do you mean? I said, well, for example, this is not New Mexico, it's New Mexico. And if you go to the East Coast and you go to Vermont, that's French. And if you go to Minnesota, that's Native American. And if you go to Colorado, that's Spanish. So you can go all around the country and speak multilingually, but then people say that if you mispronounce it, you're doing something right. If you do something wrong, then you're right. How does that make any sense? And if you pronounce something right, like that judge in Texas who told that mother that she was making her daughter a second-class citizen for speaking Spanish. In other words, to him, saying Texas is correct, but saying Texas is wrong.
But they all say Tejano.
Yeah, but it was called Texas originally.
Exactly.
Bill Fontaine.
California, not California, bro.
So, you know, the thing, this actress I was talking to, you know, her, you could see her eyes darting back and forth and the wheels are spinning like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. You're right. But, you know, but it's that conditioning that if you say Santa Monica, where is that?
You know, I took a Groundlings class one time, and the guy teaching the class, so give me a holiday. I'm on Cinco de Mayo. Never heard of it. And he said he was raised in San Francisco. And then there was a white chick behind going, oh, my God, you never heard of Cinco de Mayo? And it was funny, though, but it's like, oh, my God.
In San Francisco.
Oh, my. Exactly. Oh, my God.
She's from the Castro village.
It's been a real pleasure spending time with you guys.
What's up, fool? A big shout out to El Mero, Mero, Mero right here.
Part of the fool contingency.
Enrique Castillo. Hell yeah, man.
Thank you very much.
Can't wait to fucking do that Blood and Blood Out live or the Blood and Blood Out convention, bro.
Might as well make it a play, man.
That is a play, yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Shit.
We just
got to
get the rights.
Which version?
I know, right? We got to get a. I got to think of what food to pass out and what scene. Pass out pork chops, bro.
Pass out those little kids.
Pork have you seen it in Spanish?
Oh, no, man.
Yeah. Dude, we couldn't buy the original, the English version because they didn't have it, right? So we had to get the Spanish one with the English subtitles. Still have it in DVDs at my mom's.
I always tell people when we had Damon Chapa here and he told us that it was Disney, we couldn't believe it, right? Yeah. And I remember telling people now, bro, you don't understand. One was whatever American Me, but the other one was produced by Disney. But they don't know what the hell they were talking about. They just convinced them, no, this movie about Joker, Smiley, Happy, they're dwarves.
That's right.
Disney has a long cash.
What's up, fool? Shout out to the Latino Acting Studio, right?
Heritage? Los Angeles Theater
Los
Center.
Angeles.
Yeah, man.
What's up?